Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap with a slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bill Polian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
I got a judge that's just aching to throw me in jail. I got no money, a dress code problem, not to mention your biological clock. Is there any more shit we could pile on to the top of the outcome of this case? Is it possible?
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
All right, knock it off. You know, you ragging on me is not going to give me any great spontaneous knowledge.
Paul Perillo.
You just keep on asking about Chinese food. Can't you tell they don't have Chinese restaurants around here? Gotta let everybody know you're a tourist.
And Andy. And Andy?
Everything that guy just says is bullshit. Thank you.
Andy Hart.
Let me see. This is a tough decision you're going to hear. Get my ass kicked to collect $200. What do you think? I could use a good ass kick, and I'll be very honest with you.
Eric Scalavino. For now, anyway.
You stick out like a sore thumb around here.
Me? What about you?
I fit in better than you. At least I'm wearing cowboy boots.
Oh, yeah, you blend.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Imagine your idea. You're prancing along, you get thirsty, you spot a little brook, you put your little dear lips down to the cool, clear water.
Bam! Bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a what kind of pants the son of a who shot you was wearing?
Okay, everybody. The moment everybody's been waiting for, well, maybe not everybody, 2G. Maybe it was just me and my illustrious radio career. I finally have things the way I've always wanted them to be. All me, all the time. Paul Perillo, flying solo, PFW in Progress here on a Thursday afternoon, a very wet, rainy Thursday afternoon here in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Dan Tugender is here with me. He's in the booth. I will not allow him to speak, however. He will only speak when spoken to. Otherwise, it's all me all the time, baby, and that's just the way I want it. We have plenty to talk about. So it's not even going to be that bad. I promise. I promise.
Woo!
No Northeastern basketball talk on account of they're in a absolute free fall, losing three out of their last four. So I won't be talking about the Huskies.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know Craig. Craig's upset. Craig's so upset about it, he hasn't really even called us in like 2 years. I'm not sure he's still with us. But we have Andy and Eric at the Combine, and they are blogging away as we speak. I noticed that Andy has tried to get some comments on Matt Cassel and with some potential teams, and he is not faring very well right now. I saw he talked to Rick Spielman in Minnesota, and they can't, well, at least they say, Kevin Colbert also with Pittsburgh, they say they can't talk about Cassel because he has reportedly signed the tender and is thus under contract, so they're not allowed to do that. I think they're taking it a little bit too far with that, but we'll talk a little bit about what Eric and Andy are doing at the Combine, talk about their some of their blog postings so far. And we do have some news to report. The Patriots did make some minor moves. They let go of Kelly Washington and Billy Yates on Wednesday. Actually, that might have been late Tuesday after our show was over. But in any event, after the last time that we spoke. So we are down a couple of, I would say, valuable reserves. Kelly Washington, excellent special teams player. Billy Yates, good, solid backup interior lineman who has stepped in ably as a fill-in starter when needed over the last 4 years. But the Patriots didn't have those two spots open for long because right away on Wednesday they sent out a press release signing, in one case re-signing, old friend, Fred's not here so I can use the term old friend, Tully Vantacane, and a UMass product, tight end Brad Listorti. Listorti is a guy who was a low-round draft pick. I believe he was a seventh-round pick last year and did not make I'm actually forgetting where he was drafted. Atlanta. Okay. He was drafted by Atlanta, didn't make the Falcons, and spent part of the season last year with the Jets on their practice squad. He'll be in camp. He'll fight for a job as a reserve tight end, along with everybody else, because tight end is always the position that Belichick seems to focus on more than most. But Tully Vantakane is back. That's going to make a lot of Patriots fans happy, because whenever somebody gets released from a bad team, automatically Patriots fans are breathless, waiting to see if the Patriots can pick that guy up. And obviously Vantakane being a former Patriot, that made a lot of sense. He's a guy that was here, seventh-round pick back in 03, spent four seasons in New England. The last year he had here in 06, I believe, he was reasonably productive. He was a part-time starter that year, had 5.5 sacks. So he's a guy that knows the system. He'll be able to compete, I think, behind for those spots behind Adalys Thomas and Mike Vrabel. I'm looking for something more dynamic, however, with the outside linebacker spot. I think they need to have a guy with a little bit more of a resume than Tully Vantakane. But nonetheless, I do think that's a solid move, and one that Andy and I talked about on the roster report last week that we thought seemed to make a reasonable amount of success. So Vantakane is back. Brad Listorti is in. Kelly Washington out. Billy Yates out. So that kind of brings you up to date on the news around the roster moves, the moves around the roster. But also with the combine underway here in Indianapolis and the boys out there, there is a lot of movement going on in the personnel department, a lot of franchise tags being used, and a lot of other players who were rumored to be candidates for the franchise tag are being signed long-term. So real quickly, a couple of the guys that Patriots fans are interested in that have received franchise tags: Bo Scaife in Tennessee, tight end. A lot of guys sort of had some interest in him. He was tagged. Terrell Suggs, outside linebacker for Baltimore. O.J. Otagwe, safety that opened some eyes here playing for the Rams against New England. Carlos Dansby, linebacker in Arizona. Darren Sproles, running back for San Diego. All of those guys I thought Patriots fans seemed to have some interest in. And none of those guys I don't think will become Patriots, barring a real, I would say, interesting and creative roster move, because they're all been slapped with a franchise tag. So a couple of ways you can join in our conversation, and our listeners are going to hook us up today. 2G has already talked to me. He's already talked to some of our loyal listeners, and they know that I'm flying solo, and it's been 11 minutes already. I'm kind of out of things to talk about, especially when I'm in a bad mood after a Northeastern loss. So the fans have come through, 2G. They claim that they will be giving us calls. One way you can join our conversation, you can give us a call at 508-543-7482. Once again, that's 508-543-7482. You can also email us at webradio@patriots.com. Again, webradio@patriots.com. We have several emails already lined up. That's great to see. And I'm just going to run down what the program is going to entail today. For sure, we have a special treat for PFW in Progress listeners, because I think the guy that has the best reputation that does the work that we do is Mike Reese, and I don't think there's really a close second. Mike Reese from the Boston Globe is here. He is not out in Indy. He is in the New England area, in the Boston area, so he's going to join us at 12:30. We're going to give him a call. We're going to get his thoughts on free agency, on Tom Brady, who spoke yesterday, and he will fill you in on that as well. That was some extensive comments from Brady. Again, I think that's a collective sigh of relief, sort of echoing the comments that he made on the radio in Toronto several weeks back. But Mike was there yesterday to talk to Brady, and we're going to talk to Mike about that and about other free agent news, Matt Castle, and some of these other things that are going on around the league. So we hope to do that again at 12:30. And then in the 1 o'clock hour, some combination of Andy, Eric, maybe Brian Lowe. God, I'll tell you, Brian Lowe on this show. You talk about flying solo and having too much Paul Perillo. You wait till Brian Lowe gets on this show, and you'll be longing for another voice. But anyway, we'll get one of those guys, if not more than one, hopefully in the second hour of the show. But right now, we're going to hit the phone lines and go to, as promised on Tuesday, he promised he would help me out, and John from L.A. is coming through.
More than happy to help.
I'm pretty much out of gas, I got to tell you.
You guys have lined up a great show, though. I'm surprised you haven't had Reese on sort of periodically over the years.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't really like to sort of, you know, impose upon people. I mean, these guys are all good friends of ours, and we obviously work with them a lot every day. But I mean, I think Mike would do it. He obviously used to work here. I actually took Mike's job when Mike left here. I took the job that was vacated when he left. So we go back a long way. He's been a good friend over the years, but I don't like to sort of impose on that friendship and kind of ask him to do some of these
Plus,
things.
It's a step down for him.
Oh, clearly. PFW in progress as opposed to ESPN and the bigger circles that he rides in.
He's not like that, though. He wouldn't
Mike's a great guy.
Like that.
Mike's a great guy. As long as he's coming on the show, he's a great guy. I won't rip him any at all the rest of the week. I promised him that yesterday.
Well, I was thinking of you yesterday afternoon and this morning, and I was like, geez, there's a lot. There's going to be plenty for you to talk about.
Well, that was the other thing, too, and this generally happens is when you sit there and you say, what am I going to talk about for 2 hours? And then all of a sudden, you know, Brady's available at the Boys and Girls Club in Alston yesterday. We had an update about that up on the website yesterday that I took care of, despite the fact that I kind of dropped the ball and not getting there. We won't have to talk about Fred. Don't let Fred know that, though, because Fred doesn't need to know that.
Well, he won't listen to the show.
Right. And there's no way. He's on vacation, and there's no way he'll find out that I dropped the ball. That was 100% my fault, and I hate that. I hate when I'm wrong.
You're damn Skippy.
I don't like having to admit it, but we were able to get Brady yesterday. Then we had some roster moves to talk about this morning. Franchise tag is being dealt out left and right all over the league, and day one of the combine with Andy and Eric, and they're talking to personnel people around the league that are talking about Matt Cassel. So there's plenty to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Tully Bantakane for a second. I mean, he's not great, but you know, it's a nice solid guy to have back in the mix, and
yeah.
I just hope that I'm assuming that that's not going to preclude us looking hard at a young outside linebacker in round one.
I totally agree with you, John, and that's exactly what I was talking about. I said I hope this doesn't mean that it's still not an area of need, but I'm wondering, and this is just something that I normally would throw off of Andy and Eric and Fred, but since I don't have anybody to throw it off of, I'll throw it off of you, John. Does it say anything negatively about Pierre Woods or Sean Crable or even Vince Red that they want to bring back a guy that's...
Maybe. I mean, yeah, I shouldn't say no, but I think one thing that popped into my head is, does it say something about, yeah, we are going to target a young linebacker, and, hey, Mike Vrabel, you have a really big cap number for what you're giving us. I'm not saying that that's true. I'm just wondering if bringing a guy in like that, not that he's the equal, because he's not, but it does give you a little bit more comfort level, maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I was in favor of bringing Bantakane back. I don't think it's a stop the presses signing, but on Friday, Andy and I talked about it on the roster report, and I think the way he posed it, if I remember, was, you know, sort of talking about all these guys and who I thought made the most sense and what was most likely, and I thought Bantakane was out of, you know, some of the bigger name guys that were out there that Patriots fans seem to be clinging to. I don't think it's a huge move, but I do think it's one that makes sense. It's a cheap alternative for a guy who knows the system, and he has shown the ability to, at least in spots, be somewhat productive.
Well, that's the thing. He really is like a glorified special teamer who rushes the pass
sure,
a little bit.
Absolutely.
And we have one of the things that we've said over and over for the last, certainly since this past season ended, but even longer, I think, is that pass rushing has been a little bit of an issue, and he's no great shakes, but he's shown a little ability to get to the passer.
Yeah, now I would like to see, and I don't have the numbers on this, but I would like to see how many of his sacks, during his career have come at what I would consider key times. I know he's been a guy who, when he has played, has shown the ability to get to the passer, but I'm wondering, you know what's kind of sticking in my mind? I guess this is what I'm getting at. What's kind of sticking in my mind, John, is the AFC Championship game in 06 when Belichick decided that he didn't think enough of Bantakane to keep him in the starting lineup and instead moved Vrabel and ended up starting Eric Alexander. And that, to me, was sort of telling. You know, the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, starting him despite all that. So, you know, who knows, maybe. I mean, I really think he's Larry Izzo plus kind of guy in terms of just like the contribution level. I don't think he's much of anything, but
yeah, no, I agree, and I thank you very much for bailing me out here in the first segment of the show, John. And as always, you're our leadoff caller, and you brought plenty to the table. But I think the Izzo thing that John brought up, 2G, is interesting because you might have a situation where Izzo could be I don't know if he's not available, but you know the whole stuff with the steroids and you know his testifying. He is a 13-year veteran. He is a free agent. Maybe this is the end of the line for Larry Izzo. I hope not, because I think he's a really valuable leader in that locker room, and I think he does a great job. And you know, I think for a lot of the reasons off the field, I think he is a pretty important guy, and I hope he's back. But I wonder if maybe, and I think John brought it up, I think he is a Larry Izzo type. He's a linebacker with some athleticism and plays very well on special teams. Maybe, you know, that's something they can sort of target for him down the stretch. But, you know, moving on, I want to get back to the Brady situation before we get Mike Reese on, just to fill everybody in. I'm not sure if everybody around the country knows what took place yesterday, but Tom was part of a charity event that was set up through the Patriots Charitable Foundation. That took place in a local Boys and Girls Club in Alston, Mass., which is just outside, it's a part of Boston, where he was giving away laptop computers as part of a an event with one laptop per child, I believe, is the name of the organization that donates laptop. I think he donated 1,000 laptops. Was that it, 2G? To children all over the world. I think there were 31 different countries involved in this particular charitable organization. So as part of this, he obviously was made available, and predictably all the questions were about Tom's rehab and his, you know, his injury and whatnot. And I'll tell you, you know, sometimes you can read quotes on a piece of paper or whatever and not necessarily get exactly the gist of what you know, a guy is talking about, but hearing the quotes and listening to Tom talk about it, he certainly seemed very optimistic. I would think, you know, I made the comment on Tuesday, based on the reports that we were getting about him working out and doing whatnot, I don't really have a whole lot of doubt that he'll be ready to go at the start of the season. Now, he indicated that he's been working out with Matt Cassel periodically. He just worked out as recently as Tuesday with Bill O'Brien here in Foxborough. He's done some rehab work in L.A., in California. He's done some rehab work here in Foxborough. He says he's doing everything that he needs to do, everything a quarterback needs to do. He's been golfing. He's been working out. He's been doing all the stuff physically. He has no limitations right now. He was even asked hypothetically if training camp were to begin today, if he thought he could go. And he said, yeah, I'm not sure that the medical staff would agree with that, but he feels like he's ready to go and do stuff. Now, obviously, you got to put this all on the back burner until he gets out on the field and takes a hit, because then that's when we'll know for sure, you know, how far he has come. But I don't think there's really any question right now whether or not he's going to be able to play at the start of the season.
Paul, I got a quick question for you.
All right.
The fact that Brady is saying he's good to go, do you think the Patriots lose a little leverage in their talks with other teams in regards to trading Matt Cassel?
Yeah, I saw that on Florio today, the Pro Football Talk, who I think still he remains the best in the business nationally in coming up with stuff. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with this, because I think there's a notion that somehow the Patriots were trying to convince the rest of the league that they actually needed Cassel, and that was going to up his trade value because they were unsure about Brady. Well, just how dumb, I mean, I can never underestimate how dumb other teams are, because I see them do a lot of dumb things. But I can't imagine teams are so dumb that they would say, wow, you really need him? I better cough up an extra pick. If you really need the guy, you're not going to trade him. And I just can't imagine that teams would fall for that. But I mean, it certainly seems that's what the Patriots are trying to do, is up that trade value as best they can. And it's smart business. I mean, if you don't need the guy at all and everybody knows you don't need him, obviously his trade value is going to be as low as it can be. So more power to the Patriots if they're trying to sort of cloud that health situation as best they can without, you know, without violating Brady's, you know, personally. And, you know, you don't want to have a lot of conversation about another, you know, one of your players' health status. I mean, that you kind of tread a thin line right there on stuff like that. But I wanted to get to some of this stuff here that Andy and Eric have been posting. Andy has been trying to do some of the Matt Cassel, you know, as long as we're on that topic, 2G, that you asked the question. He talked to Jim Schwartz, the Lions' new head coach. He just finished up a press conference at the Combine. This was this morning, Andy posted this, and he said, let's see, during his impressive dealing with the media, he answered one question dealing with the impact Bill Belichick had on his early development in the league. Later, he listed Belichick, Marvin Lewis, and Jeff Fisher as three guys in that order who had the greatest impact on his career. After his press conference, in which he addressed the fact that his team had a lot of quarterbacks and answered a couple of questions on the top prospects in the draft, Andy followed him into the hall to ask him about Matt Cassel in particular. No spring chicken in terms of tampering rules, Schwartz initially shot down the topic. I really can't comment on him. He's under contract with another team. I followed by asking if Cassel's 1 year of NFL action would raise his stock and maybe make him more attractive than the top college prospects. It does mean something. It does lessen that risk factor, so to speak, Schwartz said. You've seen him do it for a year, 2 years, 5 years, or whatever it has been with a particular quarterback, not necessarily talking about Cassel. And then Andy obviously points out that Detroit holds the top pick in April's draft, as well as the number 20 overall selection in the first round. That from a trade with Dallas. Would obviously be considered a team in the market for a potential franchise quarterback. Cassel could be an option, even if Schwartz didn't want to admit it. Now, let's see. About an hour later, Andy has another post here that's titled Strike 2 on Cassel. Talked to another team executive, Minnesota Vice President of Player Personnel Rick Spielman, approached in the hallway outside the media workroom, politely said he couldn't talk about Cassel since Cassel accepted and reportedly signed his franchise tender earlier in the month. Other teams can't talk about his status or any potential trade possibilities as the quarterback is technically under contract. Cassel may be a hot topic in Patriots Nation and in talk radio circles such as these, but he's pretty much a one-man, no-comment machine at this point in the combine. So Andy is trying. I'll give him credit. That's I think one of the biggest stories that he should be chasing out there is what other teams think the market is for Matt Cassel. We're all speculating a first and a third or a couple of seconds or two firsts or what he's exactly worth, but it'd be nice to find out from other GMs around the league what they'd be willing to pay him, but evidently so far none are really willing to do that. So we'll have to see how that goes. Moving on, we also have Andy's favorite guy. You know, when Andy goes to the combine, 2G, he can't help himself. He has to, I don't know why he just doesn't move to Pittsburgh, but
Mendenhall is ridiculous.
He's ridiculous. Andy Hart is ridiculous. First, Kevin Colbert, who is the director of football operations of Pittsburgh. He loves the guy. It's ridiculous. I mean, he has a man crush. I mean, he even says Hart Colbert. I mean, it's just it's an embarrassment. And then he talks about Mendenhall, and because Kevin Colbert, 2G, referred to the Steelers draft class as kind of a redshirt year, he thinks that means that he felt that Mendenhall would have been a big impact player. But it really is unbelievable.
I'm never happy.
He's well, you're an embarrassment, is what you are. Let's see. Why don't we hit a? I can't hit an email because it just knocked me off over there. Hi ho. I don't know what happened, but I'm going to get the email back online, and I want to get a couple of emails before we're joined. We're going to be joined shortly by Mike Reese. I'm interested in his take on Cassel in particular and what he thinks, and because I know that Mike has talked to a lot of guys around the league, and the opinions have been varied. You know, all over the map, the opinions have been on what exactly he's worth in the trade market. So 2G's probably going to get him on the line shortly. Hopefully we could touch base with him. But a couple of things. I have to give our listeners credit because they knew I was going to be alone today, and they prepared for it. And one of the things, let's see, Ben in Pennsylvania first up. Hey, Paul and 2G, hope the show is going well. I had a concern with the Izzo steroid scandal. I was listening to PTI on Tuesday, and Dan Lebatard and Tony Kornheiser were discussing the situation with Barry Bonds' trial and how Izzo and Rodney Harrison have both been caught or have testified to using PEDs. Lebatard said that he didn't know why, when media coverage is all over baseball and steroids, there is no coverage of the world champion Patriots. Coverage of the world champion Patriots are all on steroids. That's to paraphrase, but he did accuse the team of using steroids during the 3 Super Bowl run. Why isn't there coverage on this, or is it false? Hope the show is going well. I listened to the podcast, so I'll hear it tomorrow. That's Ben. I think there's a lot of different reasons for that, actually. First of all, I think it's very simple. I think football, it's sort of you know, an accepted way of life. I think fans look at these big mammoth guys and the big violent collisions that they have, and that's football, and that's what people expect. And I don't think that a lot of fans are naive enough to think that the NFL is devoid of steroid abuse, because I think you just look with your own eyes and you can see the size of these guys, and you have to wonder. But, you know, I think baseball, it's taken a little bit too far. Obviously, you guys know I love baseball. I'm a baseball guy. But I never had the affection for the record book that some of these other people do. And I just don't understand why they take it so personally when a record gets broken. Look, I think steroid use is, abuse is wrong, and I think the guys that get punished for it deserve to be punished for it. I certainly am aware that there are plenty of other guys that are doing it, and they're not getting caught, but I just think that's an unfortunate way of life in really all walks of life. I think a lot of people do things wrong, and some people get caught, and some people don't. It's just kind of the way it goes. We're going to go back to the phone calls here. 2G, we have Wayne in Jacksonville. Wayne, how's it going?
Good, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm about a half hour through. I figure I can make it at this point. I got some Diet Pepsi. Life is good.
Yeah, it's been a while. I figured I'd give you a call since you were by yourself.
Thank you.
Hey, running backs. Down here in Jacksonville, Fred Taylor got released, so everybody's talking about...
I love Fred Taylor. I think he's been a consummate professional for, you know, the better part of, what, 12 years?
Right. Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, the team was obviously pretty horrible down here, and they, you know, you can't really say they had a pretty good O-line that he ran behind, and he was still productive. So the question is a lot of the guys who talk down here, one actually is from Boston, pretty big Patriots fan. He says, you bring Fred up into that team, he could do so much more in New England or, say, in Indianapolis or another team like that. Something the Pats would look at, or are we pretty much fixed at running back?
I don't know if it's, you know, I haven't talked to Bill, obviously, or I would have thrown one out there. But, I mean, I don't know if it's something the Pats would look at. But I you know, and Andy and I talked about it on Tuesday. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think if you kind of plug him into that Lamont Jordan role, and I'm not saying the same style of runner. I don't think that Taylor is necessarily the, you know, a short yardage banger kind of runner. I think he's a great power speed combo back. But just that other guy who can swallow up some carries for you, if you got him 150 carries and you got Sammy Morris 150 or 200 carries, and Maroney could somehow stay healthy for 150 or 200 carries, that's a pretty potent running game. I think they were pretty good running the football last year. I think underratedly so. I think they finished sixth in the league in rushing. So I think that they could do a good job by spreading the carries again. I'm not a big believer in having to have that one stud running back. It's great if you have it. You know, it's great to have LaDainian Tomlinson in his prime, or Larry Johnson, or any of these other guys that have been, you know, wildly productive. But I think the shelf life is short, so I wouldn't want to invest a lot of money into it. Certainly wouldn't want to pick a guy very high in the draft, because I think those guys burn out.
The agreement there is I don't want to have one either, because and even with LaDainian Tomlinson, eventually he gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. I mean, I'm not sitting here bashing LaDainian Tomlinson.
He's going to get worn down and beat up over the course of a season.
I agree.
You got to have more than one in your stable. You got to have at least two or three. I'd like to have three, but, you know, I didn't know. They're talking so highly of the guy that, you know, he's 33 and he's like, they're already kicking him to the curb. And I'm like, you know, I've seen Corey Dillon do it.
Absolutely.
Come on. Somebody's got to be able to pick him up. I mean, his contract was pretty hefty, but for the right money, does he fit? Do you got a place for him?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, we had some pretty good running backs last year.
I do think if he fit, you know, in terms of does he, you know, here's my big question. Does he want to be, you know, sort of the de facto lead back somewhere? Does he want to go, I don't know, to a team that really doesn't have a number one running back and get the majority of carries? If he does, then he's probably not going to fit here in New England.
He didn't seem to have that problem down here.
He didn't.
Maurice Jones-Drew, no problem.
Yep, and he didn't. And that's, you know, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And that's why I'd be interested. I think he makes a lot of sense.
I mean, you know, right now they're saying, you know, Jones-Drew is going to be your feature back. I don't see it. I don't see how you figure that.
I don't either.
I still can't figure the cut, but whatever it is, they must have a better plan. I do have another guy. They got Greg Jones, so that's probably why.
Well, I am with you, Wayne. I like Fred Taylor. I think he'd make a great fit here in New England. Question is money and what kind of opportunities he's looking for. So we'll see how that unfolds over the next...
Good talking to Paul.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the call. You know, because this is all going to come to a head too, 2G. Those guys, the guys that have been released, are obviously available right away, but There is also the opportunity to have, you know, free agency starts next week, and maybe some of the other guys, some of the teams that are hoping to maybe fill a hole somewhere that don't, and all of a sudden they come back to a guy like Fred Taylor and they look for him. But I think the Patriots, I think you could do a lot worse than a backfield that consists of Lawrence Maroney, Sammy Morris, and Fred Taylor as your lead running backs, with Kevin Faulk around still as your third down back. And, oh, by the way, a young guy in Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who showed you, at least on a short-term basis, that he could fill in if he had to. So I think the Patriots' running game is just fine. Let's move along here. Alexander, next up, he says he has 5 trade proposals involving Matt Castle, and he wants me to respond to all of them. If I were the Patriots, would I trade Castle, 1, to Detroit for their second first-round pick, number 20 overall, and a fourth-round pick? Yes. To Minnesota for this first-round pick, number 22, and their third-round pick? Yes, I would do that as well. 3, to Kansas City for Larry Johnson and Tony Gonzalez, and no draft picks. I would not do that. Let's see. 4, to Carolina for Julius Peppers straight up, assuming that the Patriots are on his short list. I would do that. So fast, I wouldn't give Carolina a chance to realize that they're trading Julius Peppers straight up for Matt Castle. I would absolutely do that. Number 5, to San Francisco for their first round pick, number 10 overall alone. I would do that as well. Now, obviously, Detroit and Minnesota are more than the San Francisco one, but taking each individually, Alex, I would do those 3 trades with the draft pick compensation. Let's find out how my good buddy Mike Reese feels about that, because as promised, the number one voice of reason when it comes to the New England Patriots football team, for as much static as I give him, mostly to his face, some of it behind his back, but I usually tell him about it when I do it behind his back later, because, you know, Mike and I go back a long way. As I said at the beginning of the show, Mike, you were here, and I took your job, and then you went on to bigger and better things. That's generally the way it goes. Andy Hart calls my biography The One Who Was Left Behind.
You know that they say, like, when you're filling in for someone, there's big shoes to fill?
Yeah. Well, Pete Carroll told me when I got here that I had little shoes to fill.
That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
Because they are very little. How's it going today, Paul? How was your Kansas City panini?
It was very good.
Excellent.
How did you know about my Kansas City panini?
I was doing some reporting this morning.
Wow.
No, I'm just joking.
Wow.
One of your big fans told me, said, when you go on, ask him how his Kansas City panini was.
And all right.
And that'll be good. It'll tell Paul that
you know
I was,
what? It was underratedly good. I'd never had one before.
What is a Kansas City panini?
It was like a steak tip pocket.
Very nice.
It was very good.
Very nice.
Very good. Our listeners take care of us, Mike. That's why you're thin.
I like
you don't
that.
Do a lot of radio stuff.
I think that's outstanding. It was like, oh, someone was buying lunch, I said, I would have come into the studio.
Well, yeah. Well, I didn't want to impose that. Plus, you know, I know that you got an exciting time, and I didn't want to even think about taking you away from that. So,
outstanding.
I thank you, first of all, for joining us on PFW in Progress. But I wanted to start off right away with the Castle situation. And I know that you have sort of pulled a number of personnel people around the league. And the opinions seem to really be varied as to what Matt Castle's worth. What is your best take?
Yeah, that's the first thing I would say, is that I don't think there's any consensus. And, you know, I tend to lean to the conservative side. I think that the Patriots would be pleased and almost, I don't want to say fortunate, but I think they'd be pleased to get a solid second-round pick out of this. And, you know, my thinking is that a lot of factors have to come into play. You have to agree to the compensation with another team, but that team also has to sign Castle.
Yeah.
To a long-term contract. So that team that's acquiring him is really buying an asset at its highest point. And to me, that's why I sort of go to a second-round pick. I haven't really bought into the idea that a team would be willing to give up one first-round pick plus that big contract. And so I guess that's where I'd start, Paul.
Yeah, no, I agree, actually. I mean, I think that a lot of this first and third or whatever. Look, I think anything is possible. I mean, I'm not going to sit someone. You know, I made a comment a little while ago about, you know, we were wondering if Brady telling everybody that he's fine is going to be available for the start of the season, if that in any way lessened Castle's trade value, because now the Patriots obviously really can't keep him. They have to trade him.
blah, blah, blah. You know how the story goes.
Sure.
I don't necessarily buy that because I think if the Patriots were willing to trade Castle, I think that's clearly an indication to the rest of the league that they don't, quote, need to keep him.
Yeah.
Regardless of what Brady tells you about his health. But then I said, never underestimate the stupidity of the rest of the league. So I don't know. Maybe someone does, you know, knock the Patriots over with a, you know, a very high lucrative offer, including first round, you know, first and a third, or who knows, maybe a first this year and a, you know, some future picks, or a second this year and a first next year, or something like that. I don't know. I'm not in the personnel business, but it never surprises me. You know, if you'd asked me if you could get Randy Moss for a fourth round pick, I'd say no way.
Yep.
And they got Randy Moss for a fourth round pick. So I don't know what Castle's going to ultimately get. I tend to side with you. I don't think that the first round pick is the lock that a lot of other people seem to think it is.
Yeah, and you know, the original part of this was, does Brady's comments, you know, hurt their leverage and whatnot? And I'm with you, Paul. I don't buy that. This is where I'm coming from on this, and this is really just my own hunch. I mean, I don't have any pipeline to anyone here on this situation. I think it's been on lockdown on all quarters here. But I think, you know, to me, I think most around the league feel like the Patriots are going to trade Castle. This is just my feeling. I think this idea that they would keep two quarterbacks and the salary cap charge between them of $29.2 million, I just think teams look at that and say, that is everything that the Patriots aren't. I mean, when we've studied the Patriots and looked at the model of how they've sort of built their team and had this consistent success, this is like what the Colts might do, you know, with a Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, and those two guys don't even play the same position. So I guess I that's my feeling. I don't think that Brady's comments would sacrifice any leverage, because my feeling is that most around the league feel like Castle would be available anyway.
Yeah.
But then I guess, you know what, Paul, you have to put in your remark. Nothing would surprise you, because I think that was me that wrote that they wouldn't. Why would they bring back Tully Bantakane? And then and then Paul, the next day. So there's like bad predictions, and then there's like bad with like capital BAD predictions.
Oh,
you know?
If I had a buck for every one of those, that ain't going to happen. And then it happens within 24 hours. Those are beautiful. I didn't even know that you had said that. I would have set you up for that earlier if I know.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
have
ignored it. I would have set you up for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But before we move on, I want to talk about Brady too, because I know you were there yesterday, because I pilfered all your quotes. But before I move on, I wanted to get your thoughts on with Castle's situation. You know, with the are you at all concerned about some of these national guys that seem to kind of be convinced that they might actually keep both of these guys? I mean, you know, Adam Schefter kind of made an allusion to it. Chris Mortensen, I think, has alluded to it. Tom Curran has alluded to it. Do you think there's anything that these guys know that we don't?
Oh, man, that's so tough, because everyone you mentioned, those are all great reporters.
Well, that's why I mentioned it.
Yeah.
You know, if it was Joe Smith, I wouldn't even bring it up. But these are all respected guys, and they've generally been, you know, at the forefront of a lot of these things. So I don't want to dismiss it.
Sure. I guess we have to keep that in consideration, Paul. I guess, you know, you and Andy, we've talked, you know, how can we say this? I mean, we've talked about, you know, when we sit on the fence, we like to point out, you know, hey, wow, you're really sitting on the fence there, Mike,
right.
You know? And I've tried not to on this one. I've tried to sort of look at it and study it, and I just can't imagine them going into the season with $29.2 million of their cap with those two guys. So I guess to answer the question, obviously it's possible with Mort and Adam and Tom reporting that maybe they do know something we don't, but I'm going to stick with what I said. I'm not going to waver on that this time. I'm not going to sit on that fence that you, myself, Andy, we talk about sometimes when we like to give each other a hard time.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they have to make this trade. I just don't think it makes any sense to do it another way, but we'll have to see how it unfolds. But with Brady yesterday, I think overwhelmingly positive. I mean, not just to read the quotes, but to hear him talk. I don't think there can be a whole lot of doubt as to whether or not he intends to be ready for the start of the season.
I'm with you, and I think the key word there was intense. I mean, that was what he believes, and obviously that can change. But I thought I'll just take you back to the start, Paul. I mean, I was really surprised in this. You know, you've been at so many of those charity events, you know, and you go in and you sort of know the drill, okay? The player's there for charity, and you respect that,
right?
Because that's why you're there. And you say, geez, I wonder if he'll even address this. An example would be the Patriots charitable Salvation Army holiday party back in December when Tom Brady came up to the lounge there at Gillette and he played with, you know, talked to the kids, took pictures, and then answered questions for 2 minutes, Paul. And basically, when the questions started coming about his injury, said, thanks, guys, and he walked away.
Right.
And so you never know. Are you going to get that? Are you going to get no questions? To have him stand there and talk for about 12 minutes and 30 seconds, and I only know that because, you know, we had the recorders,
yeah.
And you look down and you're sort of like amazed. And not to pull out of that, Paul. He wasn't trying to get out of it. He was taking every question, and I really feel like it was, when I sort of processed it as I was driving out of there, I was like, you know what? I think he wanted to do this once. He said, you know what? I'll answer all the questions, even the ones that I'm sure I don't want to answer and maybe Bill Belichick doesn't want me to answer, and I'll get it out of the way. And that way I don't have to look back, and maybe this is a way of moving forward. And
I'm also wicked handsome.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and that ended, if I'm not mistaken, the last question, I think, and then he never really backed out of it, did he?
No, he didn't. I think at the end, when some of the questions were close to what he felt were maybe repeats from earlier,
right.
That's when he sort of was like, you know, let's I think we've done this, you know, let's move on here. But I was pleasantly surprised. I know the reporters were, because at the start of it, Paul, I think we all said, you know, do you think this will be a worthwhile investment of our time? And my straw poll of reporters before the thing was most people said no, in terms of being able to get news value out of the event. I don't want
right.
to sound that insensitive that we didn't care that he was there to donate the laptops, which was obviously a nice thing to do.
Yeah, and no one takes a straw poll like Mike Reese when it comes to the media before press conferences and getting everything all organized. So we can certainly trust that information. But I share your enthusiasm with the situation in general. I think that Tom sounded and looked great, and I think that can only be good news for Patriots fans. And unfortunately for Matt Cassel, I think that's going to mean he's going to move on somewhere else. But we'll see how those two stories sort of intertwine here as the months move on. But I also wanted to get your take, Mike, here before we let you go, on sort of the free agency in general. Now, not necessarily specifically with the whole league, but just the Patriots here. What do you think their philosophy heading into this year? I know that with 2010 coming, potentially an uncapped year, does that put a sort of a stranglehold on what their plans are? Do you think that they might be reluctant to get a lot of guys signed long-term right now?
I do, Paul. And if I had to assess it and boil it down, I'd say obviously it starts with Matt Cassel, because when you have that much committed on your cap, it's almost like putting a pair of handcuffs on you in terms of being able to go out and make other moves. Like, I got a call from a reporter today saying, hey, do you think the Patriots might be interested in Julius Peppers? And I said, well, I do, but cap-wise, I mean, it would have to be for Cassel to even start there, you know? And so I think all their moves are sort of contingent on Cassel.
Right.
And I think even if they do get the Cassel situation squared away, I have to believe priority number two would be a Vince Wilfork type extension. I just can't imagine him going out and signing a big-name player like a Peppers, let's say he was available, before taking care of Wilfork. I think that would probably create some problems internally in that locker room. And if I'm thinking along the lines of Vince Wilfork, let's say the Patriots did that, I might be holding out, or at least considering a holdout, should that happen. So I think, in terms of the strategy, I think it'll be mid-level to lower-level type guys, and I do agree with you. I think committing long-term dollars with the uncertain future ahead, unless the contract is advantageous from a team standpoint, I can't see the Patriots going in that direction very aggressively.
Now, with that big, huge potential free agent class next year, do you have where's your level of concern for, you know, obviously a lot of pretty significant players on that list scheduled to be free agents after next season. Yeah, how much concern do you have?
Not much concern in terms of, like,
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, in terms of the time, we agree too much, Paul. We're too aligned. Not a good match on the radio.
No.
You're supposed to disagree, aren't you? And then that leads to, like, arguments and then great ratings,
well,
right?
I'll send the script to you next time that we have you on, and that way
we'll
know our role.
You know, here's my – you mentioned, like, concern. Like, not in terms of the timing aspect, but here's a thought that struck me today that I think is interesting going forward, and really nothing to really worry about, if you will, at this time. But how about Steven Gostkowski on that list? And the reason I bring it up is, you know, they had a little trouble coming to an agreement with Vinatieri when he was up.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, the way I construed it, it was sort of like, well, maybe they just don't want to pay a kicker to be the top-rated guy at his position. You know, when, let's say, it's $2 million or $2.5 million, when that could be three or four position players, you know, on special teams or whatnot. Well, with Gostkowski now as a pro bowler, and with some of these deals that some of these kickers are signing this year, I think Rob Baronis, the guy from Tennessee,
four-year deal.
What was it, Paul?
A four-year deal. I didn't see the numbers.
I think it might have been around $12 million. So you're now averaging $3 million a year. So just in terms of looking at the free agent class, I know it's not the big name, it's not a Will Fork or it's not a Mankins, but I don't know. I'm going to be sort of curious to see how that unfolds with Steven, because he's sort of placing himself into that elite category, obviously a pro bowler. I'm curious if the Patriots would be willing to pay, you know, $3 million a year for a kicker.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I know that from talking to some people here, that was part of it with Adam, was that he just didn't feel like they needed to have, you know, the top-end kicker. You know, I don't think they necessarily thought, I mean, not that they don't think kicking is important, because obviously it is, but I think that they felt like that was a position that they didn't have to be at the top of the, you know, the salary chain on. And it'll be interesting to see with a young guy, you know, how much that had to do with Vinatieri's age.
Sure.
But it'll be interesting to see with a young guy. Oh, geez, as we speak, I see Tom Brady on ESPN with Casey O'Connell, and Scott Barboza right behind him.
I think Scott looks like a security guard. I told him, I said, you're really impressive. You need to put something in your ear, you know, to make it look like you're, like, security.
Yeah, we got to bulk him up, though, and then then he can start throwing bodies around.
It's like a rookie into his second year, or, you know, a younger player. Just get him into the program, Paul, off-season program.
The program with quotes around it?
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, Casey O'Connell, Scott Barboza, two members of our talented media relations department here at Gillette Stadium. Overall, Mike, league-wide, a lot of franchise tagging going on, and some of those guys were guys that I know the Patriots fans were falling in love with, guys like Terrell Suggs and O.J. Otagwe, Bo Scaife, Carlos Dansby. You surprised by any of these names at all?
I was a little bit, only in the volume, and then I think you made a point just in this interview that sort of made me think about it, and it's probably that whole long-term commitment thing. I think a lot of teams are probably thinking along those lines that maybe the tag itself is more advantageous for a team this year, because while you're taking that lump sum, you know, pretty high payment for that 1 year, you're not committing yourself in an uncertain future. So I hadn't had much time to sort of process it, but that would sort of make sense thinking about it in that regard.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. I think that, you know, it is a high price to pay. I mean, these guys are not going to be cheap to their teams, but they're valuable players. They're still playing well. I mean, in the case of, you know, even Darren Sproles, I mean, he's a valuable player for that team. Under normal circumstances, you might say, geez, that's a lot of money to play for a part-time player.
Yeah.
You know, a Kevin Faulk type, even though he's much younger than Faulk. That's an awful lot of money, but at the same time, would you rather, you know, go and sign a couple of guys to four-year deals and potentially have the rules change in the middle of that contract? And I don't know how that will affect things. You know, the rules probably, you know, there's going to be, I think, a different set of parameters in some way coming over the next year or two. I mean, either that or it's going to be really bad because we're going to end up with a lockout, and I don't think anybody wants to see that.
It's interesting, too. There might be a link here that we could go back on and maybe call some of our brothers in sports writing on the hockey side. Because if I recall, when NHL was going through some similar stuff, I think the Bruins had a plan, you know, where they...
they did.
You know, and I think it backfired, and I don't follow it close enough.
It did. But I don't know all the details of it, but basically they felt like they knew what was going to happen. and it didn't exactly happen the way they wanted to. They kind of loaded up in 04, and not to bore our listeners, but they ultimately ended up letting a lot of guys walk because they thought there was no way they were going to be able to retain them all. They got nothing for, you know, a lot of talented players, and when it turned out, when all was said and done, the new rules wouldn't have prohibited them from keeping a lot of those guys, and they were way behind the eight ball under the new system.
So it's something to think about. I mean, I think it's if you're sitting there in, you know, Floyd Reese's office and or you're talking to the Crafts and you're saying, how do we want to approach this? I think it is hard to map out an effective strategy when you don't know the parameters of which you'll be operating by. So it does make sense, and you could see how the league could look a lot different going forward. I happen to think, Paul, I don't know what you do. I mean, I just think they'll end up coming to an agreement on a new, you know, collective bargaining agreement and an extension. It just might take a little while to get there, and we're going to hear a lot of posturing, a lot of this, a lot of that. But I think the rules will end up staying the same, but it's just a matter of how fast do we get to that resolution.
Yeah, I mean, I think the cap system and all that will stay the same. I don't think there's much doubt of that. I don't know about, you know, some of the details of free agency and cap hits and things like that. There might be some tinkering there in terms of the, you know, the gross revenue and all that stuff. But I think that you're right. I think that the main structure of how the CBA runs now was probably going to end up being very similar, if not exactly the same. I agree with that. Mike, have you had a chance to get into the draft at all yet? I know it's a little early. I haven't in terms of specific personnel, but just wondering your thoughts on maybe the positions you think the Patriots might be maybe your thoughts on most lacking and where you think they might most likely look.
My, you know, just on the draft, it's always, you know, I have gotten into it. I think I always like to preface it by saying a lot of the information that I'm processing comes from other media members like Mike Mayock and Mel Kiper. And, you know, I think you guys did a great job in terms of watching the guys, you know, cut-ups of the guys, and I think you have a better feel for that than I do. In terms of needs, though, I mean, that's obviously something I've studied really hard, and I think the Patriots, I'd boil it down to three things: defense, defense, defense.
Yeah.
That's my thought, and I keep going back to 26th in the league on third down last season, 31st in the league in the red zone. I look at those and I just say, pick a position on defense, and I think you can honestly justify go for it. And I include defensive line there. So I think pass rush would be one area. Any way to bolster that, and coverage, cover men, cornerbacks and safeties. That's where I would sort of start. And it looks like this is going to be a really good draft, a chance to infuse the roster with some good talent.
Yeah, I think one area, too, and you mentioned the pass rush, Mike, and one area that a lot of these guys, and Mayock included, and Mel Kiper, they're talking about outside linebackers, and guys that could play 3-4, you know, the Patriots kind of outside linebackers, could be available in this draft. And I'm wondering, you know, with the Tully Bantakane signing, I hope that doesn't preclude them from being interested in some of those guys, because I think they need a young athletic player at a position like that, that they, you know, and I'm wondering also what it might mean, what Bantakane might mean for a guy like Sean Crable and Pierre Woods and even Vince Red.
Really tough. Obviously speculated that myself. Why would they bring back Bantakane? I think on that one, Paul, I'm going to chalk it up to the depth competition in training camp. And Patriots, I think, generally do a very good job at that. They bring 80 to camp, and they know that of those 80, they might need to call on 60 to 65 of them over the course of the year. So that's my first thought on Bantakane. What was the I missed the rest.
What it might mean for the first part was just what it might, you know, in terms of the draft. I think a lot of these guys are saying that there's some outside linebackers available, and I would hope that, you know, now that they have four or five guys with depth, that they're still kind of interested in getting a top-level guy, you know, young guy that could play outside linebacker and rush the passer for 10 years. I mean, that's what I'd like to see them get.
Yes. I think that is – I'd put it on the need list. I think it's tough. because this goes into that whole projection thing. If you're looking at defensive ends, and like the Browns did it a few years ago with Cameron Wimbley,
yeah,
that was a good projection. Vernon Golston, you know, let's see on that one, but that doesn't look so good right now. So I think it's a little bit harder to do that. But I'm with you. I mean, I think getting a pass rusher, someone who just has that knack for getting there, like, you know, we talk about studying up in the draft, like a Larry English of Northern Illinois, looks like he's had some good production rushing the passer. Does a guy like that fit? I think you have to put it on the radar. I don't know enough about him, but I do look at that position, Paul, and if you were to tell me tomorrow, yeah, the Patriots picked an outside linebacker with their first-round draft choice, I would shrug my shoulders and nod my head and say, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see a young athletic player that I always think of those kinds of guys with Belichick and just say, geez, you know, what would he do with guys like that, you know? And how could he find, you know, a DeMarcus Ware a couple of years ago when he came out of the draft? You know, it was just a guy. Imagine Belichick having an opportunity to work with a guy like that. And I think that they could use one of them. Now, I know that Bill doesn't seem to necessarily want to turn it over to young guys. It looks like he likes to have, especially at those positions, the linebacker spots, he likes to have veterans. But, you know, at some point, I think you're going to have to sever ties with some of the veterans that you have, and hopefully the talent is there behind them.
Yeah, and you mentioned Crable. Does bringing Banta Kane back, is that an indictment, let's say, on
right.
Crable? You didn't say that, but let's just take it there, you know. I don't go that far just yet, because I go back. I learned a lot on that Chad Jackson situation. I think you just have to let things unfold and see a second training camp. You know, I was ready on Chad Jackson to anoint him, to say, yeah, he's going to be a second-round pick, traded up to get him. They, you know, they know what they're doing. And then, you know, you watch him a little bit more, and you see maybe it's not happening. Then he gets the bad injury, and it just never worked out. Like, to me, I think it's too early to judge, and I guess that's what I learned with the Chad Jackson. Because of the draft status and,
yeah,
you know, what they gave up to get him, I probably built him up too much. And so Crable, my thought on that is, I'm not going to tear him down because they brought in Banta Kane. I want to let it unfold just a little bit more and see another training camp and see where that goes, because I'd be surprised if they've seen enough at this point to write him off.
Well, before I let you go, Mike, real quick, sticking with this outside linebacker thing and pass rusher, Julius Peppers, any thoughts?
I guess I'd have to say it's unlikely. I haven't been too good with my predictions on these guys, Paul, over the last couple of days, you know. But I'd have to say it's unlikely. I think, reading the tea leaves of what's happening there, I think they're going to reach an agreement with their other guy, Jordan Gross, the Carolina Panthers. Then they will tag Peppers, and then they'll trade him for a draft pick. And I think, given that, I can't see the Patriots going there. Big salary, even if it was like a Castle for Peppers thing, just a hypothetical that you had mentioned before I came on, and I thought your answer was great. I'd make that move before the Panthers would know that they were trading Julius Peppers. I loved it. I just don't know how you do it and work out the contract and keep that locker room, you know, where it needs to be when you're thinking about guys like Vince Wilfork, Logan Mankins, who've given you 5 years, 4 years, and I'm sort of waiting for their own extension. I think it would be a tough sell.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how the Pepper situation unfolds, just because of sort of the demands that he seems to be making out there. Now it's a four-team list, I guess, with Dallas being one of them, and 3-4 defense. So it's really strange, that situation. It seems to be deteriorating quickly, and he's a Carolina guy, so for him wanting to get out of his hometown, it must be something pretty serious. So, Mike, I really appreciate you spending so much time with us, and I know the listeners are going to love it. We'll see what kind of feedback we get, and best of luck on your pending fatherhood, and we're very excited about that, and make sure you let me know personally, because you know how much I care about that stuff.
Thanks, Paul. I do appreciate it. I also love talking ball with you.
Well, we love it, and hopefully we can get you on again. Everybody was asking why we don't do it before, and I always say, well, because, you know, Mike's got bigger fish to fry than us, but we know that that's not true. So, again, Mike, best of luck, and
thank you
very much for helping me out while I'm flying solo here and dying.
It sounds great, Paul. Have a great day.
I'll talk to you soon, Mike.
Bye-bye.
All right, Dan, let's step aside. We got the it's the 101 break that Fred likes to take, so let's do that now.
Want to be rewarded just for shopping? At Patriot Place in Foxborough, you can be. Use your already existing Visa cards when you visit New England's most unique destination and earn points while enjoying everything Patriot Place has to offer. The points you earn from shopping, dining, and the entertainment at Patriot Place can be redeemed for amazing rewards, like free admission to the hall at Patriot Place presented by Raytheon, tickets to Gillette Stadium events, autographed Patriots merchandise, and more. The Patriot Place Rewards Program is the first of its kind. Simply enroll your existing Visa cards. There's no approval and no new card. Enrolling is easy and it's free. Register one or all of your existing Visa cards and you'll get all the benefits associated with your existing card, plus Patriot Place rewards at no extra cost. And every time you shop, you'll be entered to win a $1,000 shopping spree. Visit patriot-place.com to enroll your existing Visa cards today. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
And now, a blog reading from Dan Twogender. Twogender.
August 13, 2008. Shameless. Absolutely shameless. Patriots Today's own Brian Lowe just autographed a paper plate for a young fan in attendance. Honestly, couldn't he wait until some real celebrity showed up? Update. Now he's got two more autograph seekers just outside the media tent. You can't make this stuff up. Just can't.
For other blogs on your favorite team, log on to Patriots.com. They're on there somewhere.
Back for the second hour of PFW in Progress here at Gillette Stadium. Paul Perillo flying solo. I'm a little disappointed, Dan, because I talked to Mike Reese from the Boston Globe for so long that took a lot of me time away from the show. And I'm all about me time. And now Andy is ready to take away some more me time. So I'm not getting to fulfill my my fantasy of just 2 hours straight of listening to myself talk. Andy, what's going on?
Paul, even more disappointing is the fact that it's tight end day here, and I haven't seen your boy from Northeastern yet.
Well, he is there, right?
There's a big
story in the Globe about him today. I was wondering if maybe he got hurt and wasn't going to work out or something.
No, he's here. They've been slow kind of bringing in the tight end so far. It's been mostly offensive linemen, and I was hoping I'd have talked to him by the time I came on with you so I could really discuss the relationship you guys have developed over the years through Diehard Dogs.
You do know that I don't know him, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, believe me, I'm not going to drop your name.
Yeah, he'd be like, yeah, okay. But first day of the combine, I saw some, you were doing some diligent work trying to chase down comments on Matt Cassel and meeting a lot of stop signs because of tampering issues. Has that been the overall thought process out there? No one's ready to talk about Cassel?
Yeah, so far. And basically, it's the way it unfolded has kind of screwed us from a media perspective because, he signed the tender. They offered it early. He signed it, so he's property of the Patriots. So they, there's no negotiation there between he and other teams until it's, gets to the trade point, if that ever happens. So, yeah, Jim Schwartz poo-pooed it, although he did acknowledge that a guy like Cassel having a year in the league, it does lessen the risk when compared to a guy like Sanchez or Stafford. And then Rick Spielman, the general manager or vice president of the Vikings, another potential landing spot we've talked about, didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, and beyond the tons and tons of prospects that you guys are going to see over the next 4 or 5 days, what is anything stuck out to you out there league-wide? A lot of guys getting tagged early on. I think there's up to 10 guys. The last I checked, 10 guys have been franchised. Anything catching your eye out there from an NFL perspective?
Well, first of all, I don't know the story behind it, and maybe you can research this and talk about it later, but actually I just left Tony Sperano's press conference inside, and he said they would not be franchising anyone, and when asked to discuss that decision, said in kind of a terse response, there's nothing to talk about. You know, I know there was a lot of speculation that they might franchise Crowder or even Jeremiah Bell, the safety, or yeah. even Vernon Carey. So I don't know what the you know, maybe backstory is there, but he seemed a little annoyed by the fact that they weren't using it, or, you know, that there was a question about using it. So, you know, that's another guy, you know, another tag type story. But I think in terms of being here at the Combine, a lot of that stuff, you know, aside from the executives and coaches that have come to the podium so far this morning, it's a lot more quiet than it's been in the past. We are in the new facility. We are at Lucas Oil Stadium. We're actually working out of, I think, what is essentially one of their clubs, the East Club here at the stadium. And it's not on the direct route that team personnel and all those people need to take to get to the players. So the foot traffic in the hallway, which is generally where you get a lot of information out of from coaches, assistant coaches, scouts, even agents, it's pretty much dead out here. So right. there's been an aspect of the Combine that's kind of been taken away.
Is that so? That's made obviously your life a little bit different, to say the least, yeah. but probably more difficult as well?
Well, no, I actually think it's made it easier because from our perspective, in terms of what we try to do and in covering the Combine kind of as in a double way, and, you know, all Patriots news, all league news, but also covering it from a player perspective and the prospects that are here, you've eliminated having to try to be in two places at once and having to be in the hallway while this press conference is going on. So, you know, we've been focusing a lot on the media workroom and the press conferences and the players. And, you know, Eric is going to be writing about the offensive line later today, and a lot of his prospects have been coming in fast and furious this morning. So I'm sure he'll have a lengthy story on the centers, guards, and tackles later today. I can tell you I've already made one of my Andy Hart assessments, Paul.
Well, that was my next question. Anybody going to be an All-Pro, or is anybody destined to be out of the league in about a day and a half?
Well, the two Smiths, the tackles atop the draft, Andre Smith out of Alabama
yep.
and Jason Smith, two very, very different press conferences. I was thoroughly unimpressed with Andre Smith out of Alabama. Seemed ill-prepared, did not have a lot of good things to say, was not impressed with any of his answers, has not yet decided whether he's going to work out here. Everything he said I kind of didn't like. And then a few minutes later, Jason Smith comes to the podium, and virtually everything he said I was in favor of. He was on the record, I will be in camp, I will not be a holdout type player. You want to pop in practice film, I go the same speed in practice as I do in games. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. Even, you know, cracking jokes, seemed very comfortable dealing with the media. Everything about those two players, I would have to err on the side of Jason Smith were I making a decision. So, you know, those are the kinds of things we get here, is those initial first impressions of players. You know, sometimes they're accurate, sometimes they're not. But I think comparing those two guys, there is a great divide.
Well, that's interesting. And you know, as much static as we give you for those, a lot of those quick first impressions that you're talking about have kind of turned out to be accurate. I wouldn't say all of them, but I would say the vast majority of them have sort of panned out for you. So I think you can learn a lot by seeing a guy in that setting really for the first time. And if Andre Smith is sort of, you know, putting off that attitude kind of persona, I don't think that's going to do him any good.
Yeah, I don't either. I really don't. And, you know, some people say, oh, he's a Nick Saban guy, so maybe Nick Saban give him a letter of recommendation. He's not really a Saban guy. He's a guy that Saban inherited.
Right.
So I'm not even sure if he'll have that as a benefit to teams, you know, like the Dolphins or the Chiefs, you know, places where Saban has connections. I'm not even sure he'll have that benefit because I don't know, you know, you don't know how much Saban likes him. He just sort of inherited him. I'm sure he used him, put him to good use, but may not be a Saban quote-unquote guy. In terms of other first impressions, one of my favorite ones from last year just wandered by me while I'm babbling here, and Jim Zorn looked lost. And so, you know, it was much like the football field.
What about some of those other ones in terms of the coaching? I know that you talked about keeping an eye out on the former Patriots. Have any of them spoken, McDaniels or Pio? Any of those guys been around?
No one has spoken yet. I haven't seen any of them, but my understanding is McDaniels is going to speak late tomorrow, I think, 3 o'clock or 3:30, so he is going to hold a press conference, which I think you and I both kind of expected based on his personality and based on some of the way that the Broncos do things that he might take on a little bit more active approach to that. So yeah, he is going to talk, and Todd Haley is going to talk, so he may be the Chiefs representative and we may not see Pioli down here.
Have you seen Bill or any of the Patriots guys, Floyd Reese or Nick
Caserio? I have not. Aside from the flight down, we had the flight with Scott, or Scotty O'Brien, as Fred Kirsch would say. We shared a plane with him and a couple other staffers from the Patriots. Other than that, haven't seen much. I put on the blog last night, we happened to see Pete Mangurian at dinner, but we didn't talk with him. He was eating with a group of people at the Weber Grill, as we were. But other than that, no, haven't seen a lot. It's, as I said, in terms of combines, you know, I've, whatever this is, my fifth or sixth combine, it's off to a pretty quiet start, I'd say. And I think a lot of that has to do with the new location and the new setup here.
Well, that's good. So you don't, maybe you won't bitch about as many things as you normally do?
Well, I'll be bitching because later today, I'm sure they're going to bring, you know, 17 tight ends in all at once, and I'll be trying to bounce around and make sure I get, you know, Mandeville and your boy and Pettigrew, the top guy of Oklahoma State.
Well, if the choice comes down between Pettigrew and Mandeville, you better make the right choice.
Yeah, the more I research Pettigrew, and you know, we've, you know, Mike Reese actually wrote he's a guy to keep an eye on. Everything about him does, he is enticing in terms of a Patriots prospect because he's not only a pass catcher, and he comes from a spread system there at Oklahoma State, which I think in some ways is similar to what the Patriots, you know, do on offense at times.
Right.
He's also a blocking tight end. You know, he's kind of the traditional old school catch the ball some, block some. And, you know, in recent years, a lot of the top tight end prospects have been simply pass catchers or guys that are, you know, make their money pass catching. He is a two-way tight end, and I think that's why he's rated so highly.
Yeah, it was interesting when I asked Mike, you know, I asked him if he got into any of the draft stuff yet and which specific positions he thinks are the biggest needs and which the ones he thinks the Patriots think will be the biggest needs. And I half asked him strictly because of what you just said about Pettigrew and about the tight end comment that he had made earlier, but he never mentioned anything on offense at all. He said defense, 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 could be really anything, including defensive line. The pass rush probably needs to improve. He talked about the outside linebackers, and obviously he talked about the cover guys. So I thought that was interesting because he did throw that out there about tight end, and I think we both kind of wondered if maybe he had talked to anybody, and certainly based on his answer, he hadn't, because it was all about defense when he answered the question.
Along those lines, Kevin Colbert did say that he believes it's a very strong group of not only edge rushers for the 3-4 outside linebacker, defensive end hybrid types, but also said that cornerback is one of the strongest positions in the draft. So from a Patriots perspective, you have to be pretty happy to hear that. I would say two of the team's biggest needs also coincide with two of the biggest strengths in this draft, especially, you know, if they have multiple picks in the top 100. They already have the extra second rounder. They may get an extra third. Who knows what happens with Castle? I mean, you know, you're talking about the fact that they could get a bunch of picks there in the first 2 to 3 rounds and, you know, maybe can get a pass rusher, a couple cover guys, whatever, and it seems like those needs coincide with the strengths here.
All right, Big Head, I know that you have some work to do out there, so I'll let you get back to that. I appreciate you you bailing me out for a while here. You'll be very happy to know, because you're one of those miserable people that takes pleasure in other people's misery, but the Huskies are in a complete free fall. They lost again last night at the buzzer. So the
I'm not surprised.
The Richmond trip is looking less and less enticing as the days
boring.
Go by.
Boring! Before I let you go, I do need to let you know that another thing that Colbert said is very definitively that Rashard Mendenhall would have helped that team had he not gotten injured and is a big part of their future.
I know. So, I read it. They're taking it as a big redshirt year. Funny. You know what's funny, Andy? As I read the same quote from Colbert on Mike Florio, and yet it didn't have this whole big thing about Rashard Mendenhall specifically as you had. You know, I don't know. You just go, try to go figure that out. I don't know.
You know, we all bring our own perspectives to this job. We all do.
That's, well, you know, part of being a journalist is, you know, deciphering this information. So, I'll make you happy too. You know, Tom Brady spoke yesterday. He appeared here on Wednesday.
Yes, I read all
of
that. Yeah.
Don't tell Fred that I didn't go.
Okay, I won't.
I don't know what I was thinking about and how I did not.
I got a little wiener.
Did not get there. I you know, I wrote a full update and everything, but I was
amazing
not there.
How you got that done without going.
Yeah, I talked to some people and I got the quotes later. But how did we do that? How did we not talk about that earlier in the week?
We?
Well, we were all here on Tuesday. We could have talked about that a little bit.
I just, you know, you were all there.
Okay. Well, make sure you don't tell Fred that that we dropped the ball on that one.
And
by we,
you and I, and the
by we, I mean, you know, me. So anyway,
I'll be sure to cover your butt as I always do.
Right. Say hi to Brian Mandeville, and
because I'm sure the thousands of listeners won't be emailing in next week.
And tell Eric not to call because I don't need to talk to him.
I will do. All right, we'll talk to you.
All right. Andy Hart from the Combine in Indianapolis, a little bit of a slow start, he says, starting off. I really do. As much as I give Andy static for some of his sort of off-the-cuff, buffoon-like comments, I really am interested in some of those first impressions that he comes up with. And I thought that was interesting when he talked about the two Smiths at tackle and how they kind of came across in their first press conferences. I think it's a big open job interview for these college kids, and how they handle it, I think, right off the go, sort of can be an indication of mentally where they are. Now, obviously, if you don't have the physical talent, it doesn't really matter, but mentally it can kind of give you a picture as to where these guys stand. So I think that's interesting. We can get back to the emails there and webradio at patriots.com. And Mick from Ireland checking in, he says that I'm holding up well on my own. Two genders should give you a hand and be a team player. I told you, I don't need anybody talking. I just want my voice all the time. My question today is, since Culpepper restructured his contract, does that mean the Lions are looking to stay with him next season, or will they still be a legit team to trade for Castle? Also, do you see Weish's mock draft on NFL.com? He has the Patriots taking Louis Delmas. I'm not sure. I didn't see that mock draft in the first round. Do you know much about this guy, and would he help us out? I have to plead ignorant on that one, Mike, because I don't really know for sure. Why do I keep getting timed out here, hi-ho, on the email? How does that keep happening? Why does that happen? Are you not doing it right? Why don't you just say whether or not you're screwing it up? Why is that happening? I want answers. Why are you not answering me?
If you don't, like, use it in a while, it logs off.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
For security purposes.
Well, it's not logging off, you know, that I have to log back in. It's just the email. It doesn't make any sense. All right. Anyway, Scott in Atlanta is my savior today because he provided me with a wonderful lunch from Stoneforge. And that was where I had my Kansas City panini, which that sounds like an Urban Dictionary. Can we get that on Urban Dictionary? Can that be our word of the day? And why have we stopped doing that, by the way? I'm blaming it on you. I think that you screwed this up. Scott.
Hey, buddy.
I'll tell you, that was very nice of you. I appreciate it. I was figuring, you know, first of all, only one guy here. There's no real need to buy lunch for the whole show. But you took care of Dan and I and the doctor as well, and that was awfully nice of you.
Absolutely. Well, I was glad to do it. How's the show going?
Hey, you know, I think I'm great, so the show's going fine. But now, well, obviously, when you're by yourself, it's sort of a train wreck. It's hard to kind of get your thoughts together and wonder about what you're going to say next. But we were greeted by Mike Reese for a while. Andy
Good.
Just checked in from the combine, so we're getting by. We're doing all right.
Well, have you guys talked about Brady's interview yesterday?
Yes, we have.
Okay, good.
Very encouraging, I thought.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought the print reports were one thing, and then after I saw the video last night, I thought that I thought he sounded great, looked good, and I was really excited to hear that he said he was going to be there for March OTAs. So
I agree 100% in terms of the print as opposed to the audio/video of it. I think that all the quotes came across fine in print, but when you see him actually saying those words, it's the same words, but I just thought the optimism and the encouragement were that much more enhanced.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I was just really happy to hear that, you know, he's planning on being there for, I guess, as Andy would say, he's planning on competing this year, I guess.
Well, I know Andy tends to be a little bit hard on Brady, but on the 53-man roster, Brady falls at number 53 on guys that I worry about. I got to be honest with you on that.
Good. Well, I'm glad we got to finally hear from him, you know, so that's excellent. Hey, Paul, I won't take up too much of your time, and I got to get back to work here, but I was glad to be able to get you guys lunch. I'm sure you're doing a great job. Two Genders doing a great job. So glad lunch showed up, and good luck with today.
Well, if doing a show by myself means I don't have to go to Indy for the combine, then I'll take the bullet anytime.
Then so, you're doing all right.
I appreciate it, Scott. And again, your lunch was much appreciated.
Hey, no problem. And we'll be doing it again in the future.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, buddy.
We're going to move back to the emails, Dan. We have Paul in London, our trusty
compadre. I have no idea. Well, first of all, I have to read this. Hey, guy, and two gender. I have no idea what's going on since I can't listen live today as my laptop has packed in. So I'll just ask a couple of questions. Which franchise player would have been the best fit for the Patriots? Well, which franchise player would have been the best fit for the Patriots? I would say Terrell Suggs. I would love to see an athletic outside linebacker in this scheme, as we talked about with Mike Reese earlier. Number two, what would be the highest round? What would be the highest round the Patriots would select a quarterback in? I wouldn't expect the Patriots to take a quarterback before round five if they took one at all this year. And I know that they generally, more often than not, they've taken quarterbacks in the draft. But now you have Brady. You have a third-round pick in Kevin O'Connell. I'm not sure that would be the best use of resources to take one too high again. So I would say maybe round five, six, seven, but no earlier than that. But, you know, again, like Mike said, how many times have we been wrong in the past? Number three, since the Vikings are supposedly wanting Garcia, which teams are we left looking at as potential suitors for Matt Castle? Are we basically saying it is the Chiefs, as the Lions have confirmed Culpepper and doomed themselves to 1-15, and the Vikings may be out of it? They are two of the three teams that I thought would go for Castle. Good luck, Paul. We know you can do a good show by yourself. Well, I'm not so sure of that. But I wouldn't say that Culpepper's situation takes the Lions out of it. I mean, let's get that. He's got 1 year in his contract. He sort of reworked the deal. I don't know if they added. I didn't see the latest things. I don't know if they've added any years to his deal. But I don't think that his presence would preclude Detroit from making a move. He's certainly not the long-term answer. I'm not sure what the market is out there. I think the Patriots are going to work diligently to try to make a move and get him traded, but we'll see how that all unfolds. Again, I just don't think Detroit's out of the picture. We'll go back to the phones, though, here on PFW in Progress. Chris with a TIAN.
Hey, brother. What's going on?
How are you, man?
All right. You?
Hey, I'm doing all right. I only have, what, another half hour left? I can do this.
Phenomenal job. Did a phenomenal job. As long as you had a Diet Pepsi like you said, we're all set. You had Mike Reese.
I do. You know, Dan actually took it upon himself to pick me up a 2-liter of Diet Pepsi, and he and I are polishing it off.
There you go. Nice. All right. Well, let me make it pretty clear. I was actually really happy to see Brady speak yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, to read everything. Like you said, you can read the quotes, but to actually see him and listen to him talk and everything, I think it was a sort of, hey, I'm still the quarterback of this team type thing. And what I mean by that is he sort of always had that chip on his shoulder that he was a sixth-round pick. And I think he's one of those guys, I don't know if you agree, that no matter how much success he has, he'll sort of always remember that.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously he's never been through anything like this with the injury, like he said. But I just think he loves the game. And, you know, for all the flack we've been giving him about, you know, getting fed grapes and all that stuff. you know, I mean, we can laugh and we can joke about it, but I mean, I really think he loves the game, and that, you know, we obviously, every time you hear about him being the hottest worker coming in and staying late and first one and last one to leave and all that, and I think, you know, I mean, like you said, we haven't seen him take a snap yet, we haven't seen him out there, we haven't seen him get hit, but it was a good feeling.
Yeah.
I sort of wanted to get your thoughts on that, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was very encouraged by what I saw and heard yesterday. I think that we all know. No one has to sell me on Tom Brady. I've seen the guy do so many things. He's the best quarterback in football for my money, and I've seen him do it time after time. So I never had any doubts about him, but it was really nice, I thought, to see the enthusiasm, the optimism. You could see it, actually, on his face yesterday. I mean,
yeah.
I thought that was the best part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was telling, I guess.
Yeah.
It really was. And it's, I don't want to say out of sight, out of mind, but, you know, you had Castle come in and lead the team and almost make the playoffs. And you know, he addressed about him not being around and how he spoke with Belichick and said, you know, maybe that's not the best idea that you're on the sideline and all that. And I know a lot of people sort of took that the wrong way. Well, why isn't he there type thing? Like, how come, you know, he wasn't on the sidelines like Sean Merriman was for most
He pretty
of
much
years
answered
here.
That, though, didn't he?
I mean, yeah, no, he did.
Basically,
he
said, an order from Belichick.
Yeah, he basically said, "Bill said stay away," and so the other way, you know, you'll be a distraction, and you know, so it was good. It was definitely good, and the other thing too, I think this is a huge draft for this team. I really do. I think building on what they did last year, drafting defense, I think, again, that's what they're probably going
to
do.
Yeah, I agree. It's an important draft, and I'd like to see them do that. And, you know, I don't know if you heard the interview with Mike Reese, but, you know, him saying the same thing. That, you know, a lot of times we hear, you know, me, Andy, and Fred, and Eric, you know, we kind of say the same things every week, and we kind of get locked into our points of view, and it's nice to get someone else's that's not in tune with what we've been talking about and have it sort of have the same kind of opinion. That's clearly where they need to go.
Yeah, no, they do. I definitely think that. And even, too, with the uncertainty of the cap, yeah, if they don't come to an agreement, then I don't see them making any big moves free agency-wise either. I think they'll have enough draft picks, which I think they're going to move Castle, so they'll have enough to work with to get the guys that they need, I think. I mean, I know, like you said, Bill likes to go with all the players, but I think in that, particularly in that, you know, in that backfield, that they definitely got to get younger. And they just need players. I mean, they need bodies.
Yeah, I agree. Christian, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you calling in and helping me out here as I'm flying solo.
No problem.
But, yeah, I share your enthusiasm for the way Brady looked and sounded yesterday, and I think without question he intends, and I use the word intends just because you never know, but he intends to be ready to start that season. So that's great.
Yes, sir.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. We'll check in.
Okay. Thanks.
All right, Christian. Strippers takes care of me as usual. The game of the day here on ESPN Classic is a Wisconsin at Indiana from 2002. Strippers tells me that Wisconsin wins the game 64-63. Thank you very much, Strippers. And also, my trusty producer, Two Gender, hands me some breaking news from Reese's Pieces. We just had Mike on. Billy Yates is set to re-sign with the Pats. Let's see. He says, why the quick change? This is a situation that is directly related to the uncertain labor situation in the NFL, a league source explained. Because the 2010 season is currently scheduled to have no cap, some of the rules regarding the way contracts are interpreted have changed. In Yates' case, he had unlikely to be earned incentives in his previous contract that, due to the uncapped year looming, became likely to be earned incentives. That raised his salary and cap charge by approximately $550,000 and led to the Patriots' decision to cut him. Now Yates will return with a new deal in a more manageable cap number. So basically it sounds like it was just more of a bookkeeping move than anything else. So that's good news. I think Billy Yates, first of all, is a solid guy, but I think he also is a valuable interior lineman that can play all three spots on the inside, has done a nice job at center and guard, even filling in as a starter at right guard while Stephen Neal was out for a while last year. So I think that's a good move for the Patriots to have him back, and I think not necessarily unexpected either. So thanks for Mike for providing us that. Billy Yates looks like he will be returning, and his stay away from New England was a very brief one. Let's move on here back to the emails. We do have one of our trusty audio emails here, MP3 file. This is from Mikey Vandalism, is it, 2G, in East Haven, Connecticut. Why don't you let that one rip?
What's up, everybody at PFW in Progress, or whoever is left, as I understand the rest are at the NFL Combine 2009. This is Mikey Vandalism coming to you live from East Haven, Connecticut. And my question, or should I say my comment, or should I say premium comment for this week would be about Dre Bly being waived from the Denver Broncos. Now, granted, the Denver Broncos D was pretty horrible last year, but what do you think if we brought him in? And do you think if we got him for a decent price, do you think he'd be accommodable to the New England Patriots system? We've already gotten a few pickups, I see. We have Tully Benzekin and the tight end from Atlanta. So what do you think about Dre Bly coming to New England?
Dre Bly, Mikey Vandalism. Not really infatuated with Dre Bly, I have to be honest with you. This is another one of those guys, scrap heap guy, that fans will certainly fall in love with. I think he's overrated. I think that he was he was overpaid in a couple of places. I'm not really sure where he got the reputation, but I've never been a huge Dre Bly fan. I don't think he's a great cover corner. I thought he was awful last year. But, you know, the Patriots' situation at cornerback is not real strong either, so I don't want to eliminate any possibilities, but just, you know,
I'm not really a big fan, and I would be against that move. I think it's almost like another Delta O'Neal. He's not quite as old as O'Neal, but I'm not thrilled with that one, so I'm going to pass. Let's see. What do we got next here? It was a good audio clip, though, don't you think, 2G? Steven Winchester is up? Why don't you tell me that?
Am I live?
Yes, you are live.
Hey, Paul.
How are you?
How's your day going?
Hey, it's going all right.
Excellent.
It's down to 29 minutes left.
Terrific. You know, I like the way this offseason is lining up on defense. Obviously, they've got some needs at outside linebacker and secondary, and I think the opportunities line up well with the Pats. They're a little old at outside linebacker. I don't see anything in free agency that's an upgrade, but you guys have talked about like 10 possible draft guys, which is probably as deep as we've ever seen for the type of player that looks like it could project to a Patriots outside linebacker.
Yeah, no, I from all accounts, and again, I thought Mike made a good point about this. When you're dealing with a lot of this draft stuff, especially early, you're kind of going off of what other people have said and other people have projected. The guys that do the draft for a living have sort of talked about outside linebackers as being extremely deep.
Yeah, and you're right. Who knows? And a Patriots outside linebacker is a little different than a Pittsburgh outside linebacker and some of the other 3-4 systems. But I've never seen a list as deep of guys that the draft experts are projecting. Well, this guy looks like he really doesn't fit at a 4-3 defensive end in the NFL, but boy, he could really be a stand-up pass-rushing outside linebacker. On the other hand, in the secondary, where the Patriots are a little bit younger, with Wheatley and Wilhite and Hobbs and Merriweather as what project to be, you know, right now the four leaders on that defense, I think there are a ton of free agents that could come in and help them out. And I'm not really enamored of the first round or two of the corners, and certainly the safeties.
Well, I would agree with safeties because, we talked about this on Tuesday. I think safety is, to have a first-round guy, I need the total package. I need the Ed Reed, LaRon Landry, these guys that sort of do a whole bunch, Brian Dawkins, those guys that they can blitz, they can cover, they can run support, they can do it all. I don't see those guys at the top of this draft at safety. Corner, I think there are some corners that are pretty good, but I'm not sure the Patriots will be in position to get those guys. But it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens, like Avante Davis or someone like that could be intriguing. But, I'd like to see cover men. I think the biggest gap, the biggest hole in that defense. Mike talked about 26th in the league on third down and 31 in red zone. Well, third down to me, that's pass defense.
Yep.
You know, that's,
yeah. We saw all those third and 15s.
Yeah, that's pass defense.
That they gave up, which was just stunning. So different from previous years. But you look at the free agency class, and there's at corner Jabari Greer, Foxworth. The guy at Pittsburgh, McFadden, Philip Buchanan, and some of these guys
Philip
have been
Buchanan
up.
Philip Buchanan can't play.
Well, he's been up and down. He's had a bad year, a good year, a bad year. There's some talent.
Yeah, there are some names on that free agent.
But that's a lot better than Delta O'Neal or.
Well, really? Is it? I don't see. That's what I'm not sure of. Because, like everybody will say Dre Bly.
I totally agree with you on Dre Bly.
I think Bryant McFadden is a pretty good player. I think that he would help. They lost Kelvin Hayden because Indy re-signed him, although I don't really think I think he's more of a Tampa 2 corner anyway.
I agree.
I know that's what a lot of people say about him anyway, but I do like Kelvin Hayden. I think he's a pretty good player. And obviously Indy agreed because they gave him a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and it would hurt Indy if you grabbed him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's the best fit for the system. Jabari Greer could be a very
good
fit.
Jabari Greer could be a low money guy that could fit. Andy actually mentioned him about a month ago as being a guy that when we play Buffalo, he seems to be one of the guys that stands out. But
he's not going to be a low money guy.
You think he's going to cash in?
Yes, I do because I assume that Dante Robinson, is going to get some money or is going to stay. Asamoah sounds like he's you know, looking at a long-term deal, it is possible that Greer is going to be the number one guy available, and people pay for corners.
Well, I don't think he'll be the number one guy available, but...
Well, who's going to... I mean, it's possible that Robinson will be available.
But even if they all aren't... I mean, if they all re-sign, that's money. I mean, those guys are going... If Asamoah, D'Angelo Hall, Dante Robinson, all those... If they all re-sign... Chris McAllister... If those guys all sign somewhere, they're going to get more money than Jabari Greer.
Yes, I think so. But I think Greer's going to be more like $5 million than 2 or 3.
Well, you might be right. You might be right. And I'm certainly not, quite honestly, I'm not well-versed on the economics of what these guys get before they get it. People ask me all the time, how much would you – and I don't really know. I don't have a good feeling as to what these guys are going to get before they get it. But I mean, I would be if Jabari Greer is the guy the Patriots, I think he's a better fit than the guys they brought in last year.
Absolutely.
You know, the Bryants, the Websters, the
Lewis Sanders. Well, he's younger and he's got more talent.
That's why. You know, they always get a 10, 11, 12 year veteran who's on his last legs and hope they can catch lightning in a bottle. And you know, it kind of worked once with Tyrone Poole. Kind of.
I mean, I would point to OTIS more than...
Yeah, well, I think OTIS was an STIFF, to be honest with you. I do. I think he was the luckiest cornerback that's ever played this game. I never saw a guy let his man get three steps behind him more consistently and not get burned by it than Otis Smith did. I mean, every time the guy got open, the quarterback didn't get him the ball. It was uncanny how many. The only thing I'll say positive about Otis Smith.
Then we should pay for a lucky corner.
Otis Smith had a knack for when he had a chance, he made the play, and I'll give him credit for that because not everybody does that.
Yeah, he was a playmaker.
Well, when he had a chance to make the play, he made it.
Yeah,
I don't think he met. You know,
and he made a big one in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, picking the Super Bowl. I mean, I'll take Ty Law, who blankets his guy the whole game and makes a play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but so I think there are some veterans out there that fit in well with this young secondary, and there are some great young outside linebackers that would fit in with a veteran outside linebacker group. I think it could be a really fun offseason.
Yeah, I think it already is a really fun offseason just because the Patriots are such a big part of it, league-wide. I think you're absolutely right. I appreciate you checking in. I want to get to some of these emails as well.
Have a good day, Paul.
All right, I appreciate you. Thanks very much. Let's see, we got about 20 minutes left here. We got a bunch of emails, so let's get to a few more of these before we call it a day here. And Alejandro is in Bogota, and he says, "Hello, Paul. The combine is here, and so is the dreaded All Alone Paul Perillo extravaganza." Dreaded. That's a little harsh. I hope Christina is there, although she may not look quite as hot on radio. She is not here because she is on vacation as well. I did inquire about her availability. Anyway, if you're running out of topics, here's my proposed rundown for today's show. I mean, you know, besides the usual topics like Eric is gay, Andy is dumb, Dan is useless, and Fred is semi-retarded or retired. I added the retarded part myself. Actually, Fred. He did say retired. That was my editorialization. Anyway, number one for Alejandro, why Paul's curveball rocked the world? Well, I mean, you couldn't hit it. That's why. That's why Andy thinks he can hit me. He's not going to. Does anybody anybody care about A-Rod? No, not really. Who's your black horse for March Madness? No idea. It's not the Huskies, however. Why Let's Groove Tonight is the best song ever?
Let's groove tonight.
It just is. See, it just is. It's the greatest song ever. Earth, Wind, and Fire. Got to see him perform it live after the Super Bowl. That kind of brightened my mood. And how Drew Bledsoe saved the democracy. I wouldn't go quite that far. Okay, on a serious note, the Patriots and Steelers have represented the AFC in 8 of the last 13 Super Bowls and are considered the model franchises of the NFL. Is New England-Pittsburgh, rather than New England-Indy, the marquee matchup of the NFL? Good question. Let's think about that for a second. New England, Pittsburgh. I think recently it's been more the Colts. I think the big games that they've played against each other from like 03 regular season and playoffs, 04 regular season and playoffs, 05 regular season, 06 regular season and playoffs. The 07 game there, to continue the undefeated streak for New England. I think the matchups between the Colts and the Patriots have been more memorable. The Steelers have been able to capitalize on the years the Patriots have been out of it more frequently than the Colts have. The Colts have stumbled. The Colts have choked. I mean, let's say, well, say it the way it is. You know, I know Manning gets a lot of the blame for that, but I think the team itself has also choked. It's not just Manning. You know, for example, losing a game that, you know, they marched up and down the field, Manning threw for 400 yards against San Diego. Defense can't get off the field in the fourth quarter with a backup quarterback playing a couple of years ago and Billy Volek. And then this past year, there's no excuse for them losing that game. They were in control of that game, and they allowed a punter for the Chargers to sort of win the game for them. So I think Pittsburgh has accomplished more. I think the Colts rivalry is better. How's that? Let's see here. What else we have? This is Michael. I think I already read that one. I got to start deleting my emails here. Hi-ho. Otherwise, Dan gets really upset at me for reading old stuff. Christopher, why doesn't New England sign D'Angelo Hall or Dante Robinson to help bolster the secondary, trade Matt Castle to Minnesota for their first pick, and draft Clay Matthews as a defensive end slash outside linebacker who runs a 4-5, and then draft Brian Cushion with New England's New England's first round pick, adding youth and speed to the linebacking core and improve the pass rush. So we're going to sign either D'Angelo Hall or Dante Robinson. I like Dante Robinson a
lot. Paul, they're reporting that he's been franchised.
Robinson? Yeah. I thought that was going to happen, and that's what we kind of alluded to that a little bit. And I think that Steve actually just said he didn't think that he was going to be available. And ultimately, it turns out that they weren't available. So Dante Robinson would be, I think, the 11th by my count, 11th man franchised. So they are definitely using this tag a little bit more liberally this season than they have in the recent past anyway. I think it's a good move. I don't think the Texans could afford to let him go. Let's see. Moving on here. Mark from Cheddar says, hi, guys, in two gender, or just Paul. A solo show. Brilliant. The awkward silences should be brilliant. Good to hear Andy has had a good meal in Indy with cheddar cheese. Why do you think the Patriots have re-signed Tully Bantakane? I always liked him, but do they expect him to be in the rotation or just another body in training camp? When are they going to re-sign Lonnie Paxton? I haven't heard anything about his contract status. Why not? Well, Bantakane we kind of talked about a little bit. I think he does provide some depth at the outside linebacker spot. And, you know, he does know the system. He has had some success as a situational pass rusher, and he is a pretty solid special teamer. I think his chances of making the team probably better than average, but I also wouldn't put him in the lock category. So he's more than a training camp body, but I would say less than a roster lock at this point. Just a solid depth move with a guy who is still pretty young, 6-7 years in the league. So I think it'd be his seventh year in the league. Who knows the system? So I think it makes a lot of sense. Lonnie Paxton, haven't heard a thing. Haven't heard a thing, so not exactly sure what's going on with that. I'd be stunned to see him sign elsewhere. However, he loves it in New England, and I'd be very, very surprised to see him go elsewhere. Let's see. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, that's webradio@patriots.com. We have Josh in Arlington, Virginia, who likes to bust Andy's chops, although Andy's not here today. Let the debacle begin. Evidently, he has turned his attention to me, 2G. Good luck, Paul. At least I know I will feel better about my day once this is over. Well, I don't know. I don't mean to disappoint you, but I think the show has been okay with the guests, with the help mostly of all the guests. Oh, let's see. Where are we going next here? This is the only hard part, Dan. You know, when you have all these emails, especially when they're kind of long and you don't get a chance to read them, you can't really stop talking or you get those awkward pauses that the people really, really like to criticize about. That's what they start the threads and PFW in progress about is, you know, the awkward pauses and, you know, the breaks in the action. So it's hard to kind of talk and then have the emails ready to go. And then, you know, all of a sudden Dan decides today's the day he's going to actually man the soundboard. You know, when how many times over the past 2 weeks have I said, you know, the Hall at Patriot Place and gotten nothing? There you go. Add another one to
presented
the list.
Presented by Raytheon. No,
day late and a dollar short, my friend. Let's see. Justin from New Hampshire has written a term paper for me, and I'll read it because I'm by myself. He says, hi, guys, and Paul. I've been listening for a long time, but I don't write in very often because, honestly, you guys are so good at covering all the bases, I don't feel I need to add my own 2 cents. But something Eric said last week really spurned something in my brain and drove me to finally write in. I apologize for the lateness of this email, but I didn't listen to last week's podcast until a long drive to New York this past weekend. The moment came when Eric paused to contemplate whether he would pick Matt Cassel or Tom Brady if given the choice. He actually paused to think about it. This is absolutely inconceivable to me.
Lubricants.
This has probably been covered to death since that podcast. I've got Tuesdays in the hopper, but I haven't listened to it all yet. But I cannot fathom any reasons why an educated football analyst, Andy, that's analyst, would even pause to think to compare the two quarterbacks at this point. I'm a huge fan of Matt Cassel, and what he did this past season was impressive. I was among the crowd who was writing off the Pats season 12 minutes into the first game. And Cassel made me believe that he could be a good quarterback in the NFL. But comparing him to Tom Brady is akin to sacrilege, at least in my opinion. The Patriots' schedule was fairly easy this past season. We played the NFC West, by far the worst division in the NFL, the AFC West during a major down year, the Jets twice, let's face it, Favre or not, they blow, and essentially got hosed by most of the good teams, actually housed by most of the good teams we played. Not to mention the fact that Cassel was playing with impressive talent around him. Yes, he gave us 11 wins, and yes, he deserves every bit of success that he gets. However, there is a critical difference between him and Brady. Last year, Cassel was elevated by those around him. Every year, Brady elevates those around him. There is a huge difference between those two words, and I would think a self-proclaimed genius like Mr. Scalavino would appreciate that. Keep up the great work, guys. You do good, even when you're by yourself, Paul. Justin from New Hampshire. I really have nothing to add to that because I think he really accurately broke the whole thing down. I think that's kind of how I feel about the whole Cassel and Brady thing. I love Matt Cassel, and I really think he's doing a great job. I think that during training camp last year, I thought that he had a hard time getting the offense jump-started, but he wasn't playing full games, and I think people really jumped all over that and sort of put more blame on him than needed to have. Not that he was great, but I didn't think there was any chance he was going to get cut. I give him all the credit in the world for what he did in the regular season, however. But I think everything that Justin said was accurate. It was a weak schedule. The good teams that they played, for the most part, really manhandled them. And, you know, in the Pittsburgh game in particular was the one that stood out to me because that came when Cassel was playing really well. Early in the year, some of his bad games came against the good teams, but he hadn't really hit his stride yet. At that point against Pittsburgh, he had come off a couple of 400-yard games, really was playing confident, and I thought he took a big step back that day. Now, to his credit, he rebounded, but to me, if we're talking about Tom Brady, and there's no issue of health here, I don't really think there's anything left to discuss. It's Tom Brady, every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Todd in Nova Scotia, one of my biggest critics. Damn you, Paul Perillo, and your mastery of radio. I was hoping for a train wreck that we could make fun of you about for the next 5 years. Instead, you've done your standard WEEI strong performance. Very entertaining. I'm sorry to disappoint, Todd, but I did make sure that I wasn't putting myself in a position to get really, really crucified. And I went out and got a couple of guests. I made sure that we were going to have at least one of the guys from Indy to kind of talk about the combine. Talked to Mike Reese earlier in the week, and he was kind enough to join us, and I think that bailed us out. What do you
Such
think?
Such a sellout doing show prep, Paul.
Well, I told you, when you're by yourself for 2 hours, it's hard to come up with anything to talk about. I would have run out of things about 20 minutes into the show.
Would have been radio gold.
Yeah. Gold, Jerry. I say it's gold. Strippers, I don't really understand your email. Okay. The time has flown. That must be good, right? Hey, thanks, strippers. I see. Let's see. What else we got to talk about, 2G? We're about 10 minutes left in the show. We have offensive analysis from Brian here. This is long. My goodness. Brian in SoCal. This might take up the rest of the show, this email. I got 10 minutes. I think I can make it. My guess, he says, hey, Double P, my guess is that any offensive selections in this year's draft will be on the offensive line, since four of the five starters will be free agents after this season, everyone but Copen. Belichick will need to make a decision on which players he'd like to re-sign. His decision will also likely be influenced by the fact that four of the five will be 31. Everyone but Mankins, by the time they play a game following free agency. I had the DirecTV shortcuts of the last four or five Pats games recorded, and I recently rewatched them in great detail. Here are my opinions on the offensive line. This ought to be good. While Mankins is an elite run blocker, he is a liability in pass protection. When asked to block one-on-one, he is frequently bull-rushed back into the quarterback, even by very run-of-the-mill players. Vonnie Holiday in the second Miami game comes to mind. I find it interesting that fans will say we need to protect Brady first and foremost, and in the same breath say that Mankins is our best lineman. Based on his perceived status around the league and therefore his probable price tag, is he worth re-signing when he's probably not the best fit for our pass-based offense? Might this be like Damian Woody's situation and the Pats be better off not committing the big money he would likely get? In my opinion, Stephen Neal is our best lineman. He seems to, like the perfect fit for our offense since he excels at pass blocking and getting out on screens while also being an above-average run blocker. He also is very consistent and holds up well on every single play. The problem is he will be turning 34 several games after he receives his next contract. I would agree with that. I like Mankins, but I love Neal. I think Neal is more athletic. The problem with Neal is the shoulder and the age, and I think he hits the nail on the head. I'm not quite as down on Mankins as you, however, and I'm not sure how much money it would take to re-sign him. But again, I'm not the best when it comes to the economics of the game and what these guys will and won't get. I agree I would not have given Damian Woody the contract he got from Detroit, but I do think he was still a pretty good player when he left and was elsewhere. Dan Copen is above average 97% of the time, but there are usually 3 to 4 plays a game, usually in big spots, where he absolutely gets abused like he's on roller skates. San Diego's goal line stand in this year's game is a great example. Since he signed for the next 3 years, he's pretty much here to stay. I guess we'll just have to take the bad with the good. I think Copen's pretty solid as well. I know the play he's talking about, Jamal Williams, killed him. He also had a tough time with Chris Jenkins for the Jets in the second game. But overall, I'll take my chances with Dan Copen. Matt Light is a very consistent player in both the pass game and the run game, except against elite pass rushers. The problem is that our biggest conference rivals, Pittsburgh, Indy, San Diego, have these elite rushers, and our offense usually takes a big step back in these games. I would love an elite tackle in the draft so we could move Light to the right side. Since he will be 32 shortly after he hits free agency, we probably shouldn't give him premier left tackle type money anyway. I would agree with that for the most part. I don't think he's been as bad against those guys as you do. I think he's manhandled Sean Merriman in the 06 playoff game, for example. And he's had some other good games. But for the most part, I think those speed guys have given him problems. Kazier is not nearly as bad as some people make it seem. That being said, he's average at best when comparing him to other right tackles in the league. He's also much older than most fourth-year pros, so he doesn't have much, if any, upside left. Is he really much better than a younger, cheaper player like Mark Lavoie or a potential mid-round draftee? Both of those options would at least have more upside. I'm not necessarily against re-signing Kazier, but it absolutely shouldn't be for starter level money. Well, he's going to get starter-level money because he's a starter. So I would think if we feel like that, and I can't really say I disagree with you, Brian, I would think that Kazier's deal, when it's up, that will be his last in New England. In the draft, I told you this was long, 2G. We could get maybe to the end of the show with this one. I told you. This is another one that the guy probably turned this in for his PhD. In the draft, there are a lot of first-round offensive tackle prospects I'd love the Pats to take. Specifically, Eugene Monroe and Jason Smith seem to fit our offense the best. Just as an addition here, Andy talked glowingly about Jason Smith in his interview today at the Combine. If not, there are some good prospects at center that have the ability to play guard and right tackle too, specifically Alex Mack and Max Unger. I bet Belichick would love to draft a good versatile lineman that could step into a starting role for whatever current starter is not re-signed. What are your thoughts on the offensive line? Who should be re-signed? What priority should be put on which offensive line positions in the draft? Well, I kind of alluded to all my thoughts during the course of the email, so I don't really think we have to revisit that. But I think it's a good breakdown of the line itself in general. And I do think what Andy said was interesting about the Smiths and how they came across in their interviews. So I would be surprised if the Patriots didn't address offensive line in the draft. I'm not sure how early I would do it. Maybe I would wait till the third round. I don't think it needs to be a huge priority, although they could use one of the seconds as well because they have two of those with the extra one from San Diego. But I do think that the starting five is a pretty good unit, but I think you can always improve. And I do think it's a good point to indicate that they are all going to be, four of them are going to be free agents quite soon. So we are nearing the finish line, so let's sort of wrap this puppy up. We have Matt in Oregon, who is one of our favorite listeners. Hey, Paul, it seems like the listeners have come through because I've tried to call twice and keep getting the busy signal. Anyway, quick football question. Linemen compete in all of the events at the Combine, right? What kinds of times do they get? Well, their 40 times are generally, you know, a really athletic offensive lineman might get you a 4.9 or a 4.8. But for the most part, they're between 5 and 5.5. I mean, they're predictably well off the pace of the rest of the positions. The big defensive linemen and, you know, the top-flight offensive linemen obviously aren't putting up anywhere near the numbers in any of the categories other than the power categories, like the lifting, as the other guys. They're not going to be, you know, broad jumping or high jumping or running 40 times faster than cornerbacks. That stands to reason. Also, since you may have the time, I thought I'd fill a little space with a rant. No worries if you don't get to it. Am I the only one who thinks that the media is helping to fuel the economic crisis? I mean, I know that things are bad, but if we all hear about from every but all we hear about from every news channel is how awful and dire the situation is, isn't that just going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy? I'm sure that if it were possible to research this, we'd see that consumer confidence is directly related to the news media. All these 24-hour news channels are so out of control in their sensationalism that I feel it's hurting our country. Every time I walk by a TV with Fox News on it, I see the word alert come flashing across the screen. Naturally, this used to make me think, oh no, what's happened? Is it another terrorist attack or something? Of course, it always turns out to be something as trivial as what Obama's daughters are having for lunch at their new school. But these channels have figured out what if they sensationalize everything. I'm sorry, that if they sensationalize everything, then we'll all feel that we have to watch their station to find out what's going on. So in essence, they're playing us for fools. They think we're too stupid to know any difference. Well, I, for one, am not too stupid. And I hope that more of us can realize it. Anyway, there's my rant. I feel better already. I got to tell you, Matt, I agree with you in a lot of that. A lot of that rant, because I do feel they're constantly telling us how bad the economy is. How do you expect people to go out and spend money in the economy to stimulate it if you keep telling us how bad it's going to get? Everybody's automatically going to assume you can't afford to spend any money because you're going to be living in a van down by the river any minute. So I kind of agree with you on that. There's no doubt the economy is bad. There's no doubt that the market is in the crapper and whatnot. But I got to think that unless you get more money into the economy to stimulate it, not to turn this into a political rant, but I kind of agree with you. By continuing to pound away, you're not really helping the matters here. So we'll just wrap this puppy up here, and I'm going to go back upstairs and be glad to be done with my solo effort. Patriots sign Tully Bantakane and a tight end out of UMass named Brad Listorti. He spent some time with the New York Jets practice squad. Some more franchising going on. Bo Scaife, Terrell Suggs, O.J. Otugwe, Carlos Dansby, Darren Sproles, Brandon Jacobs, Michael Kanan, Antonio Bryant, Shane Graham, and most recent one was Dante Robinson that Tucci let me know about. So a lot of franchising going on. The Combine's underway. Check out the blog on PFW. Andy and Eric are out there. Bilo is out there. He'll be putting some updates on Patriots Today as well. Special thank you to Mike Reese of the Boston Globe, who admirably filled in for about a half hour today, and we got a lot of his thoughts. You definitely, if you didn't hear this show live or if you just tuned in at the end, make sure you download the podcast because you don't want to miss what Mike Reese had to say about the Castle and Brady situations and free agency.
Hey, I'm okay.
Also, Andy Hart checked in. We want to thank him from Indy. Let's see. What else? We got anything else to thank? Oh, we want to thank Scott in Atlanta for providing 2G and I and the doctor a great lunch from Stoneforge. But again, I'm sorry to disappoint. That's the end of the Paul Perillo solo.
And thank you, Paul Perillo. Great job today.
Well, I think we did all right. I think we got by all right, I have to tell you. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of things that they're going to find to really rip me about. But anyway, we will be back for PFW in Progress on Tuesday. Hopefully Fred will be back. And the boys will not be back. Oh, no, they will. The boys will be back by then. I'm sorry. So we'll have a full show for you on Tuesday. And I guess I'll do a roster report by myself tomorrow. So you can look forward to some more. Anyway, we'll see you next Tuesday.